Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Rabbi Ben Kamen holds a Doctor of Divinity degree from Hebrew Union College. He's a nationally known clergyman, teacher, counselor. He's also the author of 11 books on human values, civil rights, and spirituality. And today on Life Quest, I'm talking with him about his most recent book called The Blessing of Sorrow, Turning Grief into Healing. Welcome to Life Quest.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be joining you.
You spend what I consider a lot of time and an important time talking about how too many people defer grief. You referred to Prince Harry and his mother Diana talking. He talked about this also. This is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's I think one of the key themes of this book that I hope will help a lot of folks. Interestingly enough, the context for that is that when the publisher, Central Recovery Press, suggested this book as an idea to me, because I have been doing significant bereavement work for some 40 years in my profession, the idea that was put to me is there something unusual or that needs to be marked and even possibly criticized by the way Americans in general do poorly with grief? And I'm sure you picked that up.
Yes.
And I thought about that, and I realized that's a big deal. That really is. And one of the issues in this book that I present, other than some of the very personal items about what to do and who to call and all those kinds of things, is that it's true. I mean, we act, I'm talking now very generally.
Yes.
Talking universally, not about any faith system in particular. We just are programmed in this gossip culture, in this youth worshiping culture, in this culture which too often, very sadly, puts aside our old and our dying because it just isn't something unpleasant, and we don't deal with unpleasantries. We love sports, we love action, we love the movies, we love the NFL, but we don't think about death very much, and when it comes, we're not equipped because we just defer it, and that causes potentially serious medical consequences as well. That's America.
Yeah, I thought about this, and the flowers, the best clothes, the makeup, the platitudes. It's like we're kind of fooling ourselves.
Well, we're hurting ourselves, too. I mean, we are fooling ourselves, and it simply doesn't work in terms of clinical recovery and the psychological goodness of our soul. You can't get around this, and you shouldn't. And in fact, you honor your dead by really embracing them in your grief, which then turns into love. When you actively grieve, the result is love, and therefore a permanent connection to the person that you've lost.
Point out that so many of the accepted practices of surrounding death and grief, they're not really based on any form of scripture at all. It's just something that's evolved, as maybe from for business reasons.
Well, I wouldn't say it evolved because of business reasons, and I think it did evolve in a great part from the ongoing faith system.
Okay,
but I don't know that. A faith applied grief is not something that's wrong. It's very fine, but not everybody doing their active life, including the one we've lost, really was theologically inclined or religious or spiritual. So why I see this in my community, in the Jewish community. It's interesting to me that people that I know and care about and admire, who are, you know, we call liberal Jews, who were never particularly traditional or ritualistic in their lives, nor was their beloved person. And then suddenly they say, out of guilt and panic, and I understand all this, They begin to do we cover our windows? Do we have to wear the black ribbons? And I answer each question based on my understanding of where they're coming from theologically. I don't think it makes any difference and it doesn't help for people to pretend that they're something that they're not,
yeah.
or that they're that the one the deceased was not. Just remember the person as themselves. The rituals can be helpful if you dip into them, but ultimately this is a very personal journey we're on, and it may be a kind of emotional salad that we take in terms of what faith offers us, what psychology offers us. But the missing we need the most is simply that we left to love each other and to support each other
yeah.
with an economy of words.
And we hide behind is the wrong term, but we've developed this thing called the celebration of life. There's certainly never anything negative presented. He was a wonderful person.
Well, that's pretty much going to happen.
Yeah.
At every funeral memorial service, meaning that you don't particularly emphasize things that were difficult about the person.
Mm-hmm.
I actually go out in that direction a little more than some of my colleagues,
yeah.
perhaps. And it seems to actually be effective. So it seems to be that we're all more in touch with the reality. This is a whole person. If this person got on our nerves or was irritable or just really not a good person, we just have to remember him or her as the whole package. And the point of a eulogy, for example, and the point of a funeral, is to serve the living.
Mm-hmm.
Funerals are for the living. So
sure.
the living at that point are really, really stricken with pain. So you just got to be judicious with the whole thing, but never go by straight formulas. It doesn't work. It didn't work when my father died. I had a rabbi who I loved and I adored, and I still bless his memory. But he presented me with, and my brother and sister, and my mother, who was so, my father died suddenly and young.
Right.
Who, such anguish that she experienced. He provided us with all these theological formulas.
Uh-huh.
Said in languages that some people don't understand.
Yes. Yes, I do. That's fascinating. And then this emphasis that grief is personal. I guess, go with that. That means everybody grieves differently, or some people do.
I don't think that anyone grieves like anybody else.
Okay.
It's an individual process and crucible as much as we are individuals. That's why I think the duty and the responsibility, the best thing someone can do, not just the officiant or the counselor, like someone like myself, but for people who come to visit and people who help, and they simply cannot judge someone because they didn't do this or they didn't do that when they're in grief.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk about it later. Go back to school later if you want. But this is real. It's hands-on. And, it's ultimately not really a religious event. It is an event of the human heart and of memory and mortality. And packed in there is a lot of fear. So I don't want someone, coming up to me and telling me, if you don't do this or that, then you haven't grieved properly. Well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's not practical, it's not kind, and it does not serve the progressive evolution of the process of grieving. At the end of the day, you're not in a church, you're not in a temple, or you certainly can be, and you can certainly go there and get benefit from the prayers. But at the end of the day, we are trapped in our bodies and our souls, and we need to be ourselves, and we need people to understand that. That's how you support somebody.
In one point, you express what happens also often at a funeral service or with grieving people. Folks are talking, but souls were not mingling. I like that, because the mingling can happen with very few words.
Yes, and I, as I've said, I really do believe that we are our best when we simply listen. We are not required to say anything. They don't want any cliches. Frankly, what I do when I visit someone who's dying, or I visit with the family or the relative of the person who then has died, I sit down at eye level with them or the person,
mm-hmm.
and I just say, I've been thinking a lot about you. And you know what? It almost always works. That's,
yeah.
that's a catalyst for them just to be themselves. They're not answering any questions. Not often. I mean, not always, I should say. Beg your pardon. But the flow of sorrow or anger or denial, whatever they need to feel,
mm-hmm.
comes out. And we don't need to be silent, but we just need to nod in understanding and say, I understand, or something like that, instead of, this is happening because it's God's will.
Right.
Maybe among the fundamentalists that works, and I hope it does.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work in general, and it can be counterproductive.
Well, it can, and upon thinking back, sometimes God gets a bad rap in all of this, in the sense of we speak for him, but it's really just the platitudes we probably have heard, and sometimes they're very hurtful platitudes.
Yeah, but you're right. I want to say that most people are really well-meaning. No one's coming in to do this on purpose.
Yeah.
Even in writing this book, I do not intend to be judgmental at all, but I want to be supportive and give them, because they really don't know what to do. And a lot of it really has to do with our own insecurity about mortality.
Yeah.
We don't talk about very much through all our decades of our lives as we get older and so forth, but it's the most important thing. Who we are.
Yeah, you have some very practical things near the middle of your book. And if you just tuned in, folks, I'm talking with Rabbi Ben Kamen. His book is The Blessing of Sorrow, Turning Grief into Healing. You quote Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you don't have to do anything but really being there with them. And
right.
But then this practical part, which I really appreciated, and that is you don't stand and loom over a person that you're visiting. Taking a seated position close to them. That's very meaningful to me.
Yeah. It is pretty essential because they want to be heard, mm-hmm. they want to be seen, and they want, if this is the case, to open their mouths and cry out with, cry is a kind of a Hebrew word, I'm stuck to in there, mm-hmm. But cry out in anger or whatever they feel.
Sure.
The only thing you can do to improve somebody's situation is to let them get the poison out.
Mm. Yeah.
The trepidation.
Yeah.
And you also cannot pretend that you have the answers. But you sure do a great deal of real good by listening, because that validates their existence, because the dying are still living. They're still here. They don't want to be treated like they're already dead. They want to be acknowledged.
Yeah. In chapter 4, what do I do in the days after the funeral? What a great question.
Yeah.
And you give some suggestions. Yeah. Or you give some suggestions of what not to do also.
Well, you know, the book lists in the front matter of what I call the Ten Commandments of Grief.
Yeah.
The first thing that we need to do is to embrace the sorrow and grief. That's not easy to do, but it will make life easier later. As you mentioned, don't submit to any formula. Grief is personal and a function of family history. At the same time, the grieving person will notice that there are some stages in this, as Kubler-Ross pioneered, mm-hmm. in letting us know. But a lot of things that people don't know include that the stages of grief are not in any way necessarily in the order presented on the page in front of you.
Right.
Anger can come first, it can come last. Depression can come second, it can come fourth. Just let it be. Let it be. And I also really feel strongly that in the days after the funeral, a lot of people come over, in many cases, mm-hmm. and they're all well-meaning, as I've mentioned. But if you get tired, and it's been a long day, and you're overwhelmed with exhaustion that's triggered by the grief itself,
mm-hmm.
you are about to get up and say, you know what, I need to go up to bed, or go over here, I just need to be alone for a while, or just with my friend and my mother. And you're not there to host anybody.
Yeah.
They're doing the hosting, so they got to understand that. And they will if you speak up. And people sometimes say things that are, kind of stupid.
Yeah.
And you can say, that's not helping me. Right. Be yourself. And don't get it. Don't get it. I've seen that many, many times.
My mother told me after my father passed away that people called supposedly to support her, but they ended up talking about their own grief of times past.
Yeah, that's why sometimes I have a little dread when people asked me to accommodate their need that they want to have people get up and speak
yes.
as they wish to at a funeral itself. And
right.
I just caution them. I never tell anybody no. No, there's no no in my vocabulary. We have to serve people at the point of need. But I do encourage them, and I say it from experience. If anybody is going to speak, and it's wonderful when people in the family or a close friend offer to tribute, it's wonderful. But they have to have a script. They have to know what they're going to say.
Uh-huh.
And they have to limit it to 3 to 5 minutes because the people there can't bear it for longer than that.
Yes.
People getting up and ad hoc and impromptu, it's usually a disaster. And they invariably begin to reveal things about themselves,
mm-hmm.
Talk about themselves, and it becomes actually physically painful to endure. Because we're there for the person that we're remembering, not for you, who is being nostalgic.
Sometimes there are some of us that would think, well, let's bury ourselves in work. Let's get back to normalcy.
Yeah. Well,
that's a deferring process sometimes.
That's exactly. That's a very deferential and it's bypassing. But I write that you should go back to work and play when you are ready and not because some old liturgical calendar
mm-hmm.
dictates when you should. There's a place for these rituals. I'm not against them in the slightest. Used judiciously, they can be very helpful. Some people need a lot more structure than others. But we can't tell people how to grieve, ultimately in a personal, deep sense, just that we can't tell them who they can love and who they cannot love.
I liked what you were quoting, I think, the French author Colette, of how that all of a sudden you seem to be all right, and then a word, a poem, a just a situation brings it all back to you, and you found yourself emotionally distraught.
She's absolutely right, and I admire her poetry about this, poetic language, because she gets it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm a little hesitant, or at least judicious, if that's the right word, to say, here is the ritual structure you need to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they ask me about it, of course I oblige and I help them and explain why it is. But I tell them it's something that you can add to what you're going to be doing or experiencing, but it's not the only thing. You have to really work with yourself and turn only to people who really don't help you, who don't just sit there blabbing at you. So this book is also not only for people who are grieving,
yes.
but for people who are going to see someone who's grieving,
yes.
and certainly for people who are visiting someone who is dying.
Yeah.
It's about what they have to say and what they want to do or not to do that's critical. Martin Luther King, who was a literary mentor of mine,
mm-hmm.
Said, you want to be great? That's wonderful. But those who are great will simply be in service to others.
Yes.
This applies also to the issue of bereavement.
Very good. Yeah. I like that. Grief knows no clock, and it surely doesn't comply with a business schedule. I had to counsel
yes.
someone just yesterday on this point who, I can go back to work. Well, you can't. And
yeah.
they weren't ready, and they realized it after they clocked in. And what a world.
Well, there's trial and error in this, too, but I'm open to help somebody just from experience, and because this is something we all share universally. We each one of us is a mortal person, and I do believe in a child of God. So let's take care of each other.
I like that. The book, again, is called The Blessing of Sorrow, Turning Grief into Healing, Rabbi Ben Kamen. Where can our listeners get a copy of the book?
It's available now on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It's officially being published July 10th.
Yes.
So the Amazon people are pre-ordering it, I hear.
Right.
But then July 10th is available, and there are going to be some bookstores that will carry it. Barnes & Noble will have it. They don't have it in store, they can order it.
Yes. Rabbi, thanks so much for being with us on LifeQuest.
It's my pleasure, and I'm very honored.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.